Nearly 30 years ago, John Hammond's dream of bringing the prehistoric past back to life. Jurassic Park was originally set to open its doors to visitors back in 1993 on the luxurious island of Isla Nublar. However, due to technical difficulties, its opening was delayed indefinitely. A few years later, another attempt to revive Jurassic Park was planned for a location in San Diego, but unfortunately befell similar complications, which seemingly spell doom for the project going forward. Now, we would like to cordially invite you to a wonderful world of a time long forgotten, and revisit the magic and wonder of the Jurassic Park franchise, right here on the latest season of Podcasters Assemble.
Welcome to Jurassic Podcast.
Hello, my name is Dinosaur Gale, co-host of Game Game Pass.
Hello, this is Stephen White, co-host of Super Mega Crash Brothers Turbo and Horror Ramblings.
This is Frost from the Super Switch Club.
Yo, this is Corey with The World is My Burrito.
This is Eric Slater from Epic Fails of History, Too Young for This Trek, and Comic Zombie.
Hey, this is Zach from the Neatcast, FN Cultured, and Podcasters Assembled.
Hey, everybody, this is Chris from Comic Zombie and Epic Fails of History.
Hi, this is Bill, podcaster extraordinaire and general great guy.
Here to share some random thoughts about
The Lost World, Jurassic Park.
The Lost World.
Or as I like to call it, Jurassic Park, Goldblum style.
The Lost World of Jurassic Park.
Lost World, Jurassic Park.
And I'm here to talk to you today about one of the best Jurassic Park films going. Yes, that's right. It's the second one that everyone hates. The Lost World.
Jurassic Park, The Lost World, sequel to Jurassic Park, The Known World.
So my memory of Jurassic Park 2 was that it was a pretty decent movie. And having just rewatched it, boy, was I way off.
The sequel to the amazing Jurassic Park, it is The Lost World, Jurassic Park.
The first in a series of sequels with diminishing returns, with one possible exception, but
Lost World, Jurassic Park was a highly anticipated follow-up to the massive hit that was Jurassic Park.
Were they able to get lightning in a bottle again? I don't think so.
So this was the first Jurassic Park movie I saw in theaters. And while I really enjoyed it at the time, even as a kid, I knew it wasn't as good as the original.
I think overall, I liked this movie.
In the pantheon of sequels, I feel like this is one of the most influential sequels. I'm not going to say important, but influential for sure.
On its own, like if it was its own isolated movie, I think it would be a really fondly remembered 90s action movie. Just if this was the only dinosaur movie we had in the 90s. I think living in the shadow of Jurassic Park, it is a bit more maligned.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The movie is fine when it's sort of Ian Malcolm, you know, Jeff Goldblum sort of going off doing his own thing.
You have Jurassic Park, which is like certainly very like overtly horror, but there's so much like action and adventure. It's more adventure than action. There's certainly a lot of adventure, and it's just all this, you know, ooh and ah. And then there's The Lost World.
When it's the Goldblum show, it's really good. As soon as the second InGen team shows up to start capturing dinosaurs, the whole thing turns into like, I don't know. Did you guys ever see King Kong with Jack Black? I don't know. It's very that vibe. Which one came out first? I think this one came out first. This one had to have come out first.
If there was a moment in Spielberg's career to look back on as the moment he began to lose some of his spark, in my opinion, this would be that film to mark that moment. And I don't say that as a person who despises this movie at all. I quite like it. But it was the first film of his that I remember being a mixed bag of reviews. Regardless, I bought the VHS without seeing the movie previously and trusted it would be a fun time.
Obviously, this movie, like the first movie, is based off of a novel by Michael Crichton. For the life of me, I'm not sure exactly where the disconnect happened, but this is a very different story than what happens in the book. There are a lot of similarities, and there are a lot of scenes that are lifted, you know, right from the book and put in the movie. But even more so than the first film, which took a lot of liberties and made some changes, and personally, I think most of them for the better. But this one, you know, as a person who really enjoyed the second novel, there was some stuff in this one that I really didn't care for. It's
also, I don't think this is the worst film in the franchise.
I do think the concept of the sequel is a good one. And I remember the marketing being really clever with the tagline, "Something has survived."
Now, Spielberg wasn't really known for sequels. Before this film, the only sequels he'd ever directed were for the Indiana Jones series. However, only one was a sequel and the other was technically a prequel. And their connections were loose at best. That is, until we get to Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and we all know how that turned out. Makes me glad they never followed through with that E.T. sequel, E2 Electric Finger Broom.
I know a lot of people hate this one.
I kind of put it on par with, like, as far as sequels go, something like Ghostbusters 2. You know, to use something we've mentioned a few times here, but in that, it's not bad. It's not like offensively bad or anything like that, but it's pretty forgettable other than a few key sequences, a lot like Ghostbusters 2.
I don't hate it as much. Why exactly? I don't know. It's not as good as the first one.
At the end of the first Jurassic Park, we're kind of left with the question of what now? I mean, our protagonists escaped the island after the dinosaurs broke free, but where do you go from there?
It does some things right, for sure. It's just, it's really hard to hit the bullseye two times in a row. And they were off a pretty fair amount in this one, in my opinion.
But yeah, I think ultimately Lost World falls a little bit short.
Now, I wouldn't say sequels were rare back then, but they weren't always a given. Some films that deserved a sequel never got one, while terrible movies seemed to spawn them on a yearly basis. Leprechaun, I'm looking at you.
It doesn't have... There was a lot of heart in Jurassic Park, a lot of a sense of wonder. I don't think it's like a fantastic movie. I think it's a bit overrated, the first Jurassic Park, but it's good. And that sense of wonder is a huge part of the movie. And the sequel just doesn't have that. And it doesn't really have anything to replace it. This could have been, Lost World could have been the James Cameron Aliens to the first Alien, where we now have this known quantity of the dino monsters, and you have this like highly trained group of people who are going in. There's no more mystery. We know what we're dealing with and we're going to deal with it.
To me, this film could have ended the story at one. Sure, there are questions like, what will happen to the dinosaurs now? Or what about that can of Barbasol that's buried under a pile of mud that is now dirt? Seriously, what is up with that? That's one of the most bothersome, unresolved plot threads to me. Who was paying Nedry to smuggle those embryos? For God's sakes, I need answers! Okay, quick Google search, and it's a company called Biosyn. Who are they? No idea, but they were apparently mentioned in the book. The first book, not Michael Crichton's The Lost World, which was published 5 years after the original novel and 2 years before this film. While one might think he had the idea just waiting to write the definitive follow-up to his hit novel, most critics made pointed observations that this was being structured to fit a film narrative in some way. That said, it does seem that the novel and the film were being produced simultaneously. And while they have similar plots, the novel does do things differently than the film.
Where Alien and Aliens are two vastly different movies in terms of tone, but I think at least Aliens is a great action movie.
So Lost World, I do love this as a sequel. Like, as a kid, I mean, already said, I owned all the toys. I had the everything. I had, you know, dinosaur Bibles, Dinotopia, everything. And, you know, as a kid, like, yeah, I love this. We're going to a different island. Like, within 10 minutes, they're like, yo, there's a site B. Also, like, Engine's back. You know, Engine's still in on this. Watch out, guys. It's Engine.
But anyways, as a sequel, it just feels like it's a well-regarded sequel that's very different from the original. And Lost World is not that, but it could have been. It's very close to being that, but just falls a little bit short.
So the premise is that John Hammond has asked Ian Malcolm to lead a team to a second island of dinosaurs, and that their job is just to observe them and document them so that they could be left alone to sort of live out their, you know, live in peace on this island. But Hammond has lost control of the board of directors of InGen. And so his, I think it's his son, his nephew, I don't know, has taken over, and they want to basically re-monetize the dinosaurs, and it turns out they want to try to capture them and bring them to San Diego and set up a sea world, as it were, for dinosaurs.
I like the concept of Isla Sorna, you know, Site B.
We expand a little bit in the Jurassic Park-iverse, JP-verse, Dinoverse. I don't know what people call this, the Jurassic Park franchise. We get a little bit more lore, a little bit more of that.
It's just like Jurassic Park, but without the fences, you know? it's a good setup.
But it's, I don't know, it's pretty good.
First things first, the cast.
It's got a really great slate of actors.
So we get some returning cast from the original film.
You know, some things they did right. I thought the casting was really, really solid. You know, Jeff Goldblum, of course, comes back as Dr. Malcolm.
I genuinely believe Ian Malcolm was chosen to return all because of Jeff Goldblum. He was one of the biggest highlights from the original film, so why not bring him back?
Jeff Goldblum, not Michael Crichton, is playing Dr. Ian Malcolm.
We get Jeff Goldblum back as Ian Malcolm.
Jeff Goldblum in the first film is more of this like rock star personality. They say it in the book, they say it in the film. You know, he's not as arrogant as he is in the novel, but he's still got that arrogance about him. You know, everything he says is right. Like, he knows he's the smartest guy in the room. But that's not the Ian Malcolm in this movie.
He's even more Goldblum-y here. And I love it. Yes, Goldblum-y. That is a word I have coined for you to use.
Well, I love Jeff Goldblum, especially as Ian Malcolm. I feel like one of the biggest flaws in this particular one is that Jeff Goldblum just didn't feel like Jeff Goldblum.
And he's not as Ian Malcolm-y, I'd say, as in the first one.
This Ian Malcolm is like Jeff Goldblum full form. And then there's Jeff Goldblum. Ian Malcolm in Lost World, where it's just like jokes all the time.
But, you know, it's been 4 years. He's probably a bit more humbled and shook up from the events of the first Jurassic Park.
Goldblum, right? This is just a thing I'm thinking of, right? He's supposed to be like a mathematician, right? He says he's into chaos theory and stuff, and that's all maths, if I'm thinking correctly. So why is he important to dinosaurs? Maybe I should have asked this question in the first film, but why? Yeah, what is his significance? Why is he needed? what's the point? What is the point in you, Goldblum? There is no point. You're a pointless character. You should be The Fly or something. Tell you what, Goldblum, you should go and remake The Fly. You'd be great in that movie.
As an actor, I think Jeff Goldblum is great, and the people they've surrounded him with in the movie, he has just a great dynamic with all of the other actors, and it's such a delight to see.
You know, with Vince Vaughn being in the film, you would think he's the comic relief, but Jeff Goldblum is playing Malcolm again, just one-liners galore. Goldblum is a treasure.
I get that they were trying to take his character in a more serious direction, considering the traumatic events of the first movie, but I feel like they really kind of nerfed what was great about his character, and maybe that's the problem with making him the main character rather than a side character who gets to have all the great, you know, ironic commentary as shit's hitting the fan, you know?
Richard Attenborough returns as John Hammond for a little bit part. And we also get cameos from Joseph Mazzello and Ariana Richards as Tim and Lex are seen at John Hammond's estate.
Outside of him, the rest of the cast are all new, save for a few cameos from Lex and Tim, plus Hammond himself. All of which we're welcome to see, even though Tim should be dead or at least in serious therapy, but I'm not here to talk about that.
I'm not sure if it's just the fact that the cast isn't as likable. It's a much bigger cast, so it's we spend less time with each one of them. And
for newcomers, we're introduced to Julianne Moore, Dr. Sarah Harding, and also Ian Malcolm's girlfriend.
Julianne Moore as Sarah Harding did a great job.
Julianne Moore was an actress I was very familiar with at this point in her career. I'd seen her in quite a few movies by this point, and I was more than happy to see her here.
Julianne Moore as Sarah Harding, Ian Malcolm's girlfriend, another bit of expansion to the Parkverse. Delightful, wonderful character. I think she did a great job with it.
Yes, because she's an amazing actress, but also because I have the biggest crush on her. Redheads, man, they drive me wild. Crazy wild.
I'm a fan of Julianne Moore, so I'm probably going to be predisposed to it. But again, they got a lot of great actors for this sequel.
Vince Vaughn as Nick Van Owen.
Vince Vaughn's character I could have done without, and honestly, I kind of forgot he was even in the film to begin with, and I've seen it like 5 times.
Who's that guy? That's the comedy guy, right? You know the one? The guy from Dodgeball. Yeah, that's him. Yeah, he always looks really tired, doesn't he? Like he's been up all night doing cocaine. He's got those huge bags under his eyes.
Now, I wasn't aware of Vince Vaughn prior to this, and while I like his performance here, he's not someone I actively seek out to watch. I don't dislike him. I just don't go out of my way to see him.
Yeah, that's him. Oh, yeah, Vince. Vinny. Oh, my old mate Vinny. I didn't know he was in this.
It's like getting a side of coleslaw at a seafood joint. I didn't ask for it, but I won't turn it away either.
Man, I didn't know Vinny was an action star before he got into comedy. That's great.
The last film I actually saw him in was Freaky, and he was excellent in that.
Richard Schiff as Eddie Carr. He's a field equipment expert.
Richard Schiff is a great character actor who's one of those faces that I knew from things, but not a specific thing, and I always found him to be a delight. He's now on ABC's The Good Doctor, and he nails it there every week.
Even some of the smaller roles, like Toby Ziegler from West Wing as the equipment guy.
Eddie Carr was a fantastic character and one of the few tragic deaths in this entire series. He was just trying to save his friends, damn it. And T-Rexes.
Like, just the banter between him and Jeff Goldblum is delightful. It really helps keep this movie moving along during its setup phase.
It's kind of the problem with a lot of these characters, is that they're there just to kind of fill a generic role, and as such, you don't really care too much about them. Like, it's kind of like a bunch of versions of the lawyer from the first movie. You know, if you had like 6 of him in one movie, it gets to be like, ugh, who cares? And there's a lot more than that.
And also one of Ian Malcolm's kids, Vanessa Lee Chester as Kelly Curtis.
Some of them, like Dr. Malcolm's daughter, just don't need to be in the movie at all.
Wow, Malcolm's kid is a real f***ing ball breaker, isn't she?
We see Ian Malcolm's daughter, Kelly.
I think the series also makes a huge mistake in feeling the need to include kids as main characters in each subsequent movie. It just feels kind of forced and contrived at times. Even though the first movie did pull it off.
Adding to the problems, though, is that there's no one to watch Malcolm's daughter. Yeah, he has a daughter, apparently. And he wants to leave her with a family friend or a babysitter or something. But come on, man, she doesn't even have Sega. So, you know, of course she stows away to the dangerous dinosaur island.
I think having kids as main characters is really tough in a way where, like, the kids in the audience can identify with them without the adults being annoyed by them.
If my kids talk to me like that, they'd be on the f***ing naughty step in seconds.
It's... Yeah, just... Ugh.
A lot of good character actors in this, you know. No one was really bad, you know.
Arliss Howard plays Peter Ludlow. He's Hammond's nephew. He's now been appointed as CEO of InGen due to some stuff that we'll get in with the movie, so that Hammond is no longer in control. And
I like that Lost World basically presents us with two human villains. Peter Ludlow, the nephew of John Hammond, who is much more of what you would expect, at least from a modern corporate evil villain character. He's the bad guy who's in it for all the money. It's what I liked that they didn't do in Jurassic Park. I liked the John Hammond being just like this idiot, but still well-meaning guy. This time now we're just in straight up villainy from the corporations, which is also I like because, you know, InGen is a bad company. So having the head of it be a bad dude makes sense.
He plays a good, hateable bad guy. Yeah, he's got a very punchable face.
All right, I had to look his name up. But I really love Pete Postlethwaite as Roland Timbo, the like kind of antagonist. He's not a villain. He's definitely not the villain in this film, but he is an antagonist.
Now, I know he's supposed to be like, you know, quotes unquote, the bad guy. You know, he kind of has a bit of a redemption arc. But the bald guy who's the hunter, who can't pronounce any of the dinosaurs' names. Oh, my God. I love that guy. He is such a good actor. He's a very, very famous British actor. See, he's got a real British accent. And yeah, he's been on so much stuff that probably, I don't know how big his Hollywood career is. I can't think of any major films he's done. He's in things like Brassed Off and stuff, which are big, big UK hits. And he's been on TV a lot in the UK as well. But I love him.
Pete Postlethwaite as Roland Timbo. You know him. Pete has been in a lot of things, and I enjoy his character. He's a jerk, but he has morals.
Finally, Pete Postlethwaite is always amazing. I think this was the first film I really took note of him as an actor and loved him in anything I saw him in going forward. He just has a presence about him, you know?
He's an amazing actor, and he really brings this film up a few notches, which I imagine from some of the other comments we're getting isn't very high.
Like, if you look at his IMDb portrait, this dude is, like, super unassuming. But I was and am still, like, all about this guy's character in this film. Like, he kind of seems like he is going to be, like, the anti-Muldoon. Like, the jerk who's just in it to kill things. And, I mean, he sort of kind of is, you know. But he's not in a totally dickish move. He just wants the fun of it, which I guess is kind of a dickish move.
I'd love to praise Peter Stormare here, but all he does is act like a jerk-ass. Not one of his finest performances.
And then you got Julianne Moore joining the cast. Like I said, Vince Vaughn's in there. It's a pretty good cast. It just doesn't, they don't gel like the original cast did from the first film. It just feels off.
And there's a bunch of other cannon fodder that, we'll get into that in the movie.
Anyway, let's dive in here.
Now, when it opens, it is still horror. I think it does a phenomenal job of that.
Now, the cold open is not quite as good as the first Jurassic Park.
I like how we start the film with how the Jurassic Park book starts.
So, this film kicks things off with a scene that, to my understanding, was in an early chapter of the original novel.
The opening is taken straight from the first novel, or at least very heavily influenced by, but it is very akin to the first novel.
In fact, several scenes found in this film came from the original novel, such as hiding from the T-Rex behind the waterfall, and Dieter being killed by those pygmy lizards. In fact, that's how John Hammond died in the original novel.
If I remember correctly, it's been forever since I read these books, but I'm pretty sure the original Jurassic Park book started the way that this movie starts.
And this one does have a really strong opening with that rich family having lunch on the shore of Isla Sonar and the girl being attacked by compies, you know.
But I have to say, this posh family of rich British they're not British people. They're posh Pam. They're like a posh family, rich with fake British accents. Like,
and those accents, that is something.
Listen to me. Do I sound like a posh twat? Yes, because I'm British. Thank you.
They're good-ish, maybe. Bill, are these good accents?
Those accents are fucking terrible. Why? Why movie people? Why hire people that aren't British to pretend to be British when they can't do British accents?
And, like, why would anyone be on Isla Nublar? Like, you should know that that's a no bueno island.
What a terrible place for a picnic.
It was awesome seeing the compies this time around.
Don't give it beef, little girl, come on, use your brain.
Ooh, I like the little bait and switch when when they're all looking for the missing little girl, and the mother just runs over to the camera.
Now, the little girl screams a lot, yeah? If my daughter, and I've got two of them, if either of them screamed like that, I would have reacted much quicker than these fake accented British people. I would have been over there like a whippet, kicking the crap out of those tiny little things. And also, do you see the size of all those sailors walking around, moving all the gear about? Come on, guys. Let's go stomp these little f***ing dinosaur hamsters.
And she looks off screen, and then she screams.
That was pretty shocking.
And then you see Ian Malcolm standing there. Oh, no, Ian Malcolm is on the island with us.
Yeah, strong start. And then in true fashion to the original Jurassic Park, the mother screams and we transition to Jeff Goldblum yawning. And what an amazing transition, but still leaning more towards humor.
Oh, wait, no, he's just in a subway. Clever. Clever, Steven Spielberg. Clever, not girl, director? Clever director.
So the door is answered to the mansion by a man who's clearly Alfred. And I suddenly realize that Hammond is what would have happened if Bruce Wayne had parents. He would have turned into Hammond. He would be this piece of shit.
When we are reintroduced to Ian Malcolm and soon after John Hammond, the plot is laid out explaining that there was another island of dinosaurs that is now in jeopardy of being obliterated, I suppose, and Hammond wants it protected.
Site B? Site B? Site fucking B? You what? Another site? What? What?
So Jurassic Park wasn't even the original park or idea. I guess it was the end game for John Hammond, but they've got this whole other island where they originally were experimenting and creating the dinosaurs and breeding them initially and then transporting them to Jurassic Park, which we see them breeding and creating the dinosaurs at Jurassic Park. So this was just the starting point?
It was cool to see Hammond one more time, even though he died in the first book, but he didn't die in the first movie, so it made sense to bring him back. And, it was cool to see him again. And the way he narrates the ending was kind of nice.
I really love, how sleazy Hammond is in this movie. He makes it sound like everyone is going to go together to the second site, knowing that Sarah Harding is already there. Like, by herself. Dealt with animals in Africa. Yeah, because they have living dinosaurs in Africa. Obviously, Hammond. Smooth f***ing move, jackass.
Now, say what you want about the man, but he doesn't seem like a heartless bastard only looking for the next dollar. Sure, in the first film he might come off that way, but I see it as a man who's achieved something monumental, and he wants to share it with the entire world. I mean, wouldn't you want to see dinosaurs? You were able to clone dinosaurs, wouldn't you want to share it with people too? And you name me one billionaire that would do that without regard to profit. Go ahead. I'll wait.
So Hammond has, this character arc in between movie one and movie two, and now he wants to save all the dinosaurs, hence why he's sending Malcolm and his girlfriend and this little research team in there to document that the dinosaurs are real and we need to preserve and protect them by staying away.
In any case, he's looking to preserve his creations, if that's what we can call them. But those board members at NGEN have taken away control from Hammond and have set their sights on using the island to populate their all-new Jurassic Park in San Diego. This is all well and good, but this should have been Biosyn, that company looking to steal the embryos from the first movie. But I guess since we didn't clearly establish them, what's the point, right? At least the book I never read followed through with that.
Yeah, he also had a change of heart, even though he, that's the whole thing.
But InGen, of course, now under the control of Hammond's nephew, who just wants to go rape and pillage. Let's go get all the dinosaurs. We'll just add them to the zoo. That'll be fine. What could go wrong?
Malcolm tells Hammond, "So you went from capitalist to naturist in just 4 years? That's something."
Favorite character, I've already touched on it. I like Ian Malcolm. I love Jeff Goldblum, and Malcolm has, he's got so many entertaining, he's so sarcastic. Like when he's talking with Hammond in the beginning and John goes, "Don't worry, I'm not going to make the same mistakes again." And Ian responds, "No, no, you're making all new ones." Like just stuff like that makes me chuckle. Or when Eddie is showing them the hideaway thing way up in the sky, which apparently is on the tallest tree in the world. It's coming off the World Tree from World of Warcraft because it's above every other tree on the island. And Ian's response is, "Oh no, no, you're actually right at prime, like biting height at that point." He just has so many great one-liners throughout the entire film.
"Don't worry, I'm not making the same mistakes again." No, you're making all new ones.
I mean, it went wrong in the island, but you know, bring him to the mainland, it'll be good.
Malcolm doesn't want to go until he finds out that his girlfriend is already on the island. And apparently she's real gung-ho about this. This was not a trick. She went of her own free will. So he says, "All right, fine, I'll go." And they decide they're going to leave right now.
"Oh, yeah, I'm going back to the island. Da-da-da-da-da, ooh, back to Ibiza. Da-da-da-da-da-da."
I do really like the concept, though. It's basically a safari through the Cretaceous period, right?
"I'm on a boat, motherfucker, with my flippy flops, heading to the second island because I'm a knob."
Unfortunately, the movie's pacing kind of grinds to a halt for the first half of the movie. And I think one of the big problems is that the first movie did such a good job building up anticipation for the island that it didn't really feel necessary to take their time getting to Site B in this one.
So they get to the island,
and it seems like it took way longer.
And I'm envisioning them showing up in more of like an armored troop carrier, but it's sort of just like a Winnebago. With a bunch of equipment on the inside.
Why did Goldblum invite his daughter to what is clearly a private, like, mercenary installation? I mean, he was a failed husband in the first film, so now this film is focusing on his failed fatherliness in round two.
I like how after Malcolm and the team meet up with Sarah, which... why the hell is she there by herself? Like, she's there by herself, no backup, no vehicle, no tent, nothing. And then Ian shows up with everybody else, with everything that you would need. That's interesting.
And the moment with the herd of Stegosauruses.
Stegosauruses!
We didn't get any in the first movie, and it was just... that was just such a magical moment for me, especially as a kid.
Oh, yeah, give me some Stegosauruses. I love me some Stegies. It's one of my favorite dinosaurs. Absolutely love them.
They're looking for Malcolm's girlfriend, whose name I already forgot.
Sarah! Sarah!
When the characters first see the Stegosauruses.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. There's a cute little tiny Stegosaurus. I really want one.
Vince Vaughn. God bless Vince Vaughn. The other comedian who's in this movie.
And they're just sort of walking around yelling in the jungle. And I'm like, "You're on a dinosaur island. Should you really be doing this?" But it turns out she's actually fine.
But when they're looking at the Stegosaurus, Vince Vaughn, and this is like amazingly like inconsistent cutting. He's using a camera in one scene. And when they go back, he's using a camcorder. And then when they go back again, he's using a camera again. This is beautiful. I've never noticed this before. Like, you gotta love cuts.
And we see a couple of Stegosauruses in all their CGI splendor. And this is some really 90s CGI, let me tell you. Like, this is prequels Star Wars level CGI.
And that's the thing. Like, a lot of the redeeming qualities of this movie are nostalgia. Because once again, I loved dinosaurs as a kid, so this was really a dream come true.
I like that they actually explain the lysine contingency that they talked about in the first film and how to put that into effect, but apparently the herbivores are eating or finding that grain within some of the plants, and then the carnivores are eating the herbivores, so then therefore they're able to get past a lysine deficiency. So at least they explained it. Whether it would actually work or not, I don't know.
Hey, Sarah Harding has a lucky bag. Let's put a pin in that for a week or a few weeks. We'll pull that pin out. I'll let you know.
Oh, why have you all parked your trailers next to a cliff?
Parking all their cars and trucks and trailers on the edge of the cliff.
Oh my god. What is wrong with you people? Come on, that is obviously the worst possible place to park a trailer. It's gonna get pushed off.
This seems like a potential problem.
Anyway, they go back to the camper to discover that Kelly, Malcolm's daughter, has stowed away.
Oh, hang on, wait a minute. What the f*** did Jeff Goldblum's daughter do to the trailer?
And in like the 20 minutes they were gone, she completely trashed the trailer. It's just, I can't believe what it's, I don't understand.
She's been there like 10 fucking minutes. It's like she's had a food fight with herself. Maybe she watched Hooked and she did Hook and she's had like an imaginary food fight or something. But Jesus Christ, man, like that's some serious mess that she's caused. It's not like there's been a fucking dinosaur running around in there. She was in there by herself. She was hiding. And yet, I'm sorry, but my daughters would get an earful if they did that. I would be absolutely furious. Oh, man. Like, oh, it's making my blood boil just thinking about it.
And, no, like, literally only Malcolm cares about this. Like, everyone else is just like, yeah, whatever. She's 9. It's a dinosaur island. This is cool.
Injun's entrance is kind of baller. Like, this is one of those, as a kid, where, like, you see this happening, and in your mind, you're like, oh my god, the toys. Like, those helicopters are airlifting in your future toy box toys. It's great.
The dinosaurs that headbutt the truck, that was cool.
The Pachycephalosaurus capture toy. Like, god, I was so hyped seeing a Pachycephalosaurus in this film. Again, I could have named all of these dinosaurs before, like, ever seeing this movie. I already knew what they were, so I'm that kid that is like hype as shit, and then there's like the super nerdy guy, and like you see the long haired dude, you know, and you're like, wow, like I want to be that guy. I kind of still do want to be that guy. I did do the whole long hair thing, so you know, maybe honestly I am that guy, who knows.
Oh hey, it's the guy, you know, the Russian guy from Armageddon, that guy. Yeah. Oh, they show him being mean to a compi. I forgot what's compi stand for. Compsognathus? Whatever, I call them compies. It's like a little tiny, like a tiny little lizard dinosaur thing on two legs. But he's mean to it. He zaps it with like a cattle prod. And I'm just thinking to myself, yep, he's going to get eaten by a bunch of those things later.
All right. So the motorcycle that we see in like all of one scene, like maybe two scenes, is the Caribs Canyon, which apparently became the Ducati Multistrada.
You know, some of the puppets and animatronics they use in this film look really good. And then other times they don't. And you can tell it's just a puppet that they just threw at the camera or just placed there. But then other times the CGI still looks good. Not as good as the first film, but yeah, I don't know. It goes back and forth.
A super great but woefully underutilized set, the dinosaur graveyard / T-Rex nest, is so cool.
Oh, no. Go. Don't get down from the canopy. Don't leave your daughter up there. Oh, you humongous. Don't leave your daughter up in the canopy with the bald guy on her own, essentially, because he's going to get out in a minute. Oh, man, like, come on, man. You should be looking after your daughter. She should be with you at every point of this movie.
Some stuff happens. We see some oohs and ahs and then running and screaming.
This one does have some great action sequences.
The whole scene with Malcolm's team and Vince Vaughn being a Greenpeace warrior, essentially.
In another twist, we find out that Vince Vaughn, the quote-unquote photographer, is actually an eco-terrorist that Hammond hired to sort of mess up the plans of the second team that he knew would eventually be showing up.
Just there to wreak havoc against the poachers. And
when they sort of like sneaky sneak in and cut all the dinosaur locks, there's no way that Vince Vaughn's shitty little bolt cutters could ever have cut through that like 3/4 inch lock. Like, absolutely no way. That is impossible. That is unrealistic. 90s, once again, you have ruined everything.
Like, that whole scene is entertaining, but definitely a it has become an action flick at that point, because you've got car explosions, you've got things on fire.
Chaos ensues, and we not only get a brief Triceratops redemption, but another vehicle falling into and out of a tree, albeit a little more rapidly this time.
So they let out all the dinosaurs in the camp, and it's like, what is going on? They trash the camp, they endanger the lives of everyone, and all for what? For what?
You've got so much crap going on that doesn't make any sense.
In a film of unbelievable moments, a Jeep is blown up by a Triceratops or something, and it flies into the air, and it happens to land exactly in the tree that Roland was sitting in, waiting for the Tyrannosaurus. Fortunately, he and his mate dive out right in time.
You have a car that goes ass over tea kettle hundreds of feet through the air to land on a tree while the hunters are trying to shoot the T-Rex? What?
So they're trying to hunt the T-Rex, and so they find the T-Rex nest and they find the T-Rex baby, and they're like, hey, let's use the baby as bait. This movie is just one long cliche.
I will say that it's cool that they kind of up the ante as far as having two giant T-Rexes, and the dinosaurs are certainly a lot more unleashed in this one, and that they're free to kind of go where they want, and there's a lot less mechanisms in place that are at least designed to protect people.
So Vince Vaughn finds the baby T-Rex and is like, oh, we gotta help it. And they put it in the car and they drive it back to their camper. And I'm like, what is going on? Why?
And I have to say that Sarah Harding has got to be one of the dumbest characters sometimes.
Oh my God, Jeff Goldblum's girlfriend is a complete and utter tool. Like, honestly, what a bellend. Yeah, she should have easily been crushed by that Stegosaurus when it swung that tail. She should be one dead motherfucker by now. I'm sorry. Sorry to say it, but she should be. And she's supposed to be like the safe, careful one on this island who's getting about all by herself doing her bits and bobs. No, she is the biggest liability going.
Like, when she brings the injured baby T-Rex into the base camper or whatever the hell you want to call it, the kid Kelly is the smartest person in that room. She reads the situation and is like, I need to get the hell up out of here now. Which turns out to be the smart move, believe it or not.
What are you doing?
Okay, so let's take a moment to appreciate the baby Rex animatronic that is wireless. Like, it's a full body thing that these people are carrying around. I mean, it may not be entirely wireless. Like, maybe they're hiding something under shirts or something. Look, I don't know, man, but this thing's awesome. Like, to have so much going on inside this and, like, people are carrying it around, come on. Like, this is why animatronics are the best thing ever. Like, screw CG. I hate CG. It's dumb. It's lame unless it's used, like, in partnership with animatronics. Animatronics are where it's at.
I also really like seeing the baby T-Rex. I thought that was really cute. Nice little touch there.
Did you have the T-Rex baby toy with the damaged leg and muzzle? Because I did. I think it was awesome. I mean, like, not particularly special in any way, shape, or form, but, like, it's still awesome. You didn't have one. Shut up.
And again, Ian Malcolm, he just, his one-liners throughout this entire movie, I love it. I hope I can remember them by the end.
And, of course, no one listens to Malcolm, who's like, get that thing out of here, get that thing out of here.
Uh-oh. Mummy's very angry. That line f-ing cracked me up.
One of the standout scenes is where two T-Rexes attack the RV.
You know, the T-Rex scene when the mom and the dad come to rescue the baby.
You know what's better than one T-Rex? Two T-Rexes. Well played, movie. Well played.
I love it. That's definitely one that sticks out in your mind. Because what's scarier than one T-Rex? Oh, two? And they're pissed off?
I mean, what did you expect? The baby's crying. Parents are going to hear it. They're going to come looking for the baby. This is what animals do.
Ah, that's great.
I'll tell you what. As bad as the CGI in this movie has aged, the T-Rexes still look really good.
And at one point, it's dangling off the cliff in the rain.
And while that cliffside scene is pretty intense, it's kind of ridiculous, too.
Have you ever played Uncharted 2? Because the bus over the cliff scene is kind of basically how that game starts.
I mean, look, the tension as Sarah lies on the glass is on point. That would terrify anyone. You're practically staring at death, waiting and wondering when your time is going to be up, because you know it's coming. But then there's that rope business. Now, most films don't seem to give a damn about rope burns or the amount of strength it would take to hold on to a rope. Hell, they're all lucky they didn't lose a limb when the camper went right off the cliff, passing them by without injury.
As a kid, the bus and the climbing, like, through the bus and the rope and all of that part, it was tense. Like, oh my god, tense. As an adult, this is now a comedy. People go up, people go down. People go up, people go down. People do eventually go up and stay up.
But hey, if we're gonna suspend disbelief and say dinosaurs are real, then I guess we can let that slide. I'm kidding.
So now the person slipping around through the mud is Eddie. Though we're only about halfway through the film, where Nedry was at about the three-quarter point.
I know this is gonna sound terrible, but I love the bit where the bald guy, after making all the effort to try and rescue everyone else, gets double-teamed by the two T-Rexes and gets ripped in half. Oh, it's just a great bit of cinematography. I love it.
You know, Eddie is the real hero of this film.
Guys, pour one out for Eddie. Eddie didn't deserve to die.
Although the trailer and the car and all that would not behave that way. I mean, that guy, he sacrificed himself, you know, up to the very end.
Outside of Muldoon, we didn't really get to know any of the characters who died in the first film, but Eddie spent his last moments trying to save people. Rest in peace, Eddie.
He's a true hero of this film.
Fucking T-Rexes.
His name was Eddie, right? maybe?
If you're a fan of this podcast
and want to see it continue,
help support us on Patreon,
where you can unlock tons of exclusive content,
including, but not limited to,
movie commentaries,
ad-free versions of our promo specials,
extended cuts,
early access to new episodes,
behind-the-scenes clips,
first access to merchandise,
blooper reels,
and even a chance to vote on what we cover next on our Podcasters Disassembled episodes.
Just head right on over to patreon.com/podcastersassemble.
That's patreon.com/podcastersassemble. Podcasters Assemble.
Link in the show notes.
Game Pass is the only Game Pass podcast being recorded from the bowels of a secret bunker under Microsoft's campus by two hosts who are being forced to play every game on the Game Pass service in alphabetical order. Join Doug and Ryan as they play games, boy doing any actual work, and navigate the high-stakes minefield that is corporate America. Game Pass. It's a Game Pass podcast.
So there's this whole back and forth debate about the T-Rexes and how they will behave now that they move their infant. And one paleontologist is arguing, oh, they'll leave us alone. And then Sarah, I think, is arguing that they're going to follow us no matter where we go. And the paleontologist was played by Thomas F. Duffy, and he was portraying a real-life paleontologist. And I remember seeing this guy on so many different dinosaur specials back in the day, and he had the big goofy hat and the beard, and again, I remember seeing it as a kid and thinking, oh my goodness, that's the guy. No, of course it's not the actual guy, but it's based upon the real life person.
So because the camp was trashed by the Triceratops and stuff that they released, and then the camper was trashed by the T-Rexes, there is absolutely no way to contact anyone off the island. And so they are officially screwed unless they can go to the old visitor center base, whatever, camp in the center of the island, which unfortunately is surrounded by raptors.
So nobody has any working radios at this point. We got to work our way into the island where all the carnivores live. And there's still power at this old facility that has been overtaken by raptors, but yet we're going to get in there some. I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Wait, hang on. But they just destroyed all the hunters' hard work
and put them in mortal danger. And now the hunters are now joining up with the people. Like, there's no motive there. It's just like, hey, come on, let's all get on this together. No, come on, people. Come on, that's not great. Gash.
So Hammond's nephew is with the team. I guess his name is Ludlow, whatever. And he's just, like, drinking the entire time. Like, what? Like, I get that we're supposed to believe that he's an asshole because, like, earlier in the film, he was, like, taking over the company. But now he's also drunk all the time, and I'm very confused. Like, was that needed? Like, I don't understand this plot point.
Now, I will say, me and Deodor have a lot in common. In order to prove we're definitely not gay, we go 100 yards away from every other man just to pee. Zach, if we're ever on an island full of dinosaurs, I'm gonna make you watch me pee. I ain't dying out there.
And of course, asshole guy from Armageddon, off trying to go to the bathroom, falls down a hill.
Dieter just fell, and if you listen to our previous season on Batman, you know what that means. He's about to become a Batman villain.
And Uppence has come for him in the form of, I don't know, 50 copies tearing him to shreds.
I can't say I'm normally one for extended death scenes, but we are once again talking about one of the most iconic death scenes ever.
Oh, we actually get to see how dangerous compies can be when they're in the pack. Yeah, sure. One-on-one, they're nothing. And we kind of saw, you know, the start of it with the very beginning with the little girl. But now that we actually see him, I think the guy's name is Stark. He goes and just gets mobbed by them. Which I love that his friend that he asked to watch out for him isn't paying attention. Just sitting there with his headphones on. Dangerous environment. Animals everywhere. They could kill you. I'm just going to put my headphones on. I'll be fine.
And it's not just a thing that happens. It's sequential. So, like, Deodor and the compies, like, it's a lot. It really is. Like, this time watching it, it's like, man, I didn't realize that this takes up, like, 10 minutes of the movie. But it's just this tiny battle. It's literally wrapped in, like, all of this much larger stuff. But then there's this tiny little insignificant battle of a man versus compies, and the man loses.
Of course, we can't see it, so we just get sort of a stream of blood coming out from behind a downed tree.
And it is followed by, like, a great blood in the water scene, which, I mean, we already had that in, like, Jurassic Park 1, and don't worry, they're going to do it again in a few minutes.
Oh, there's a scene where they're sleeping, and we can see what Kelly has been eating, and it's more candy. No wonder they cut her from the gymnastics team.
Water ripples in the water puddles. We know what that means because we saw the first movie.
Vince Vaughn, you idiot. You took the bullets out of the guy's gun on an island full of dangerous dinosaurs.
So right before we're going into the engine base, the T-Rexes show up again because they're following the scent of the baby's blood that Sarah had on her jacket.
Why would the T-Rexes return because of the infant blood when they have the infant?
And also, these people are all sleeping on the ground. F*** that, I'd have slept in a tree. That T-Rex could have wandered past and never seen me.
And also, why would they be interested in, like, chocolate bars? And also, and probably the most important question, is how did they sneak in? These things, what is it, like 20 tons or something for a T-Rex? I don't know. It's bigger than a truck. I'm sure it's at least marginally heavier than that super noisy lifted truck that's around the corner from where you live. You know the one I'm talking about. But I do like the scene because, like, everyone would have lived if they had just stayed asleep. Like, the irony. Like, the T-Rex sneaks in, and the Hispanic dude who let Deodor die is the one who, like, screams and kills everyone. So, don't pour one out for him.
They, of course, tear everything apart.
There are a lot of interesting deaths in this movie, interesting death sequences. I love when they're hiding from the T-Rex in the waterfall, and the snake goes down the guy's shirt.
So, T-Rex chase scene. We end up in a waterfall, and this scene is great. It was great. It is great. I love this scene. But, like, I'll never get over the fact that an archaeologist is going to be just, like, straight up afraid of a snake. Like, dude, you did research with dinosaurs, and you're now, like, currently dealing with live dinosaurs, and, like, that's not freaking you out.
and he freaks out and jumps into like the T-Rex, just like, no. And I imagine the snake probably bit him while he was doing that too.
And dude's just afraid of a single snake.
Oh my God. The snake on your shoulder, Jeff's coming. You know, Goldblum's going to come in here and turn into a fly. Don't worry about the snake on his shoulder. Oh, wait, he got eaten by a T-Rex. All right. Yeah, you shouldn't have worried about that snake.
And, like, sure, archaeology is not herpetology, but, like, come on, man. Like, of all the things that are happening, that's what's going to make you panic more than the T-Rex chasing you? Sure, whatever.
My favorite is probably the sequence where everybody's kind of running from the T-Rex in the dark and it steps on that one guy, and then the camera follows as it keeps running.
Boom, 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 squish. Yeah, there we go. It's taken two movies, but we've finally seen someone get trodden on by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Great.
And you see he's still stuck to its foot for a few steps. I got a kick out of that. That was pretty cool.
And then everybody either is eaten by the T-Rex, or then they run through the field where the raptors live, because that's smart.
Now, the bit with the raptors in the grass is great. I just love it.
All right, so that aerial shot of the raptors encroaching upon the group, still an all-time favorite.
Now, I really dug the raptor scene in the fields. I like the framing of the shot, seeing the raptors just kind of creeping up on them.
I mean, sure, there's a lot of weirdness that happens in this movie, and Eddie gets torn in half, which is, like, a shame. But, like, I think this kind of makes up for, like, most of the things in the movie, even the things that we haven't seen yet because we're not talking about it yet. But, like, this shot was and is cool. And, like, to me, this is, like, on the level of the Akira motorcycle drifting scene. It's just that split-second thing that happens.
Seeing the different lines moving through and verging on the people. And then the CGI as they're jumping over and eating them. Now, I was watching this on my phone, but it still looked really good. I thought this really held up well. I love this moment. It just really gives the fear of the raptors.
It's just, like, it's, like, burned into your memory.
Oh, and by the way, those people deserve to die. Now, I don't know about all of you, but I am not walking through tall grass. I grew up in the Deep South, and that's a big hell no for many reasons. Dinosaurs are the least of my concerns.
Gotta love the hypocrisy of, don't go into the long grass, from the guy who's currently going into the long grass.
So I think it's Nick. Vince Vaughn is Nick. He goes off to power up the radio. He's apparently the one guy to go do that.
These raptors are f***ing terrible, man. They couldn't catch a mouse for dinner if it was already dead in front of them. They just fight over everything and just let all their dinner get away. I was convinced that Vince Vaughn was dead here. It just suddenly sort of flicked a wave to him, and then he's like in the middle of all the raptor action, but he's just standing by the double doors, just being like, over here, helicopter's up there, come on.
Ian hurts his ankle so he can't run, and he's stuck behind with Sarah and Kelly, and then they're chased around by raptors.
So the main characters are, like, digging their way out of the building, of the shed, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, when I was a kid, I probably shat myself a little when that raptor head just, like, popped in under there. Like, you know it's going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. And also, because it's not CG, it is a real raptor head popping in there. So that is terrifying.
I also like how they add in these little animalistic touches to the raptors whenever they attack one another, like they're aggravated with each other and just kind of fighting. I don't know why it amuses me, but it feels true to animal behavior, even ones that never existed. I'm kidding!
This whole chase scene, it's not as nearly as scary as in the first film, and the raptors seem to be taking their time with going after the main characters. They took out all the cannon fodder very easily in the film, or in the field, but no, we can't do that to the heroes, no.
One of the things I wanted to bring up really quickly is that the arguably the main character, or one of the main characters in the novel, is not even in the movie. Dr. Levine, I believe it's Richard Levine. And in the book, he kind of kickstarts the story, but in the movie, he's nowhere to be found. Speaking of kicks, I have no idea why they thought it was a good idea to make Goldblum's daughter, or excuse me, Dr. Malcolm's daughter, this gymnast character who does essentially like a gymnast routine, like on the bars, and kicks a raptor through a wall.
This is, by quite some distance, the worst thing in this entire movie.
I know it's going to be brought up, so I'm going to speak up in defense of Kelly and her gymnastic abilities.
Who I think is the first human to kill a dinosaur in the franchise. I don't remember a dinosaur being shown to have been, like, straight up killed by another human. And if so, I'm wrong, and, you know, don't at me, haters. But I think it was Kelly. She does her little gymkata kick into the dinosaur, the velociraptor, and knocks it onto a spike and kills it.
It makes no sense.
Oh, we come full circle with Kelly, who was cut from the gymnastics team.
Wait, Jeff Goldblum's daughter flunked gymnastics?
Doing her amazing gymnastic move to take out a raptor.
You just spent a movie and a half showing how terrifyingly crafty and aggressive these things are, and then you make them into, like, a joke.
I know that's Chris's favorite part of this movie, Chris over Comic Zombie. He's like, he loves this movie because of that. It's he's gonna kill me.
Yeah, she's clearly at a very high grade Olympic level to punt that raptor out of the thing.
It's just the whole sequence. Obviously, I don't think anybody's going to be like, my favorite part was when the girl kicked the raptor.
Delightful.
If any of you were being attacked by raptors and you had a skill like that, wouldn't you put it to good use? I would hope so, because she saved lives, damn it.
It's probably more than anything universally disliked.
That particular scene where she does her gymnastic kick into the dinosaur is also the second best quote in the movie, when her father, Ian Malcolm, runs up to her after she knocks the dinosaur out the window and says, "The school cut you from the team?"
It had almost zero build-up, apart from a brief conversation at the very beginning where she's like, I got flunked out of gymnastics.
Which is a nice callback from earlier in the movie where he had not been aware. He asked her how she was doing in gymnastics and was not aware that she'd been cut from the team.
She flunked out of gymnastics. You're not going to be swinging around like that. You'd have got on there, swung around once, fallen to the floor, and got eaten by the raptors.
But I just, for the life of me, cannot figure out why in the hell that made it into the film.
Makes no sense. Terrible. Terrible.
It's just ridiculous.
Oh my god. And just even like the shots of her spinning around and around really close up. Like that, when you see that shit at the Olympics, it's really impressive because they show it from far away. So you can see all the flips and spins and shit they're doing. Or you can just see like a head and a body just sort of vaguely spinning around a pole and she kicks a raptor and it flies out a window. It is terrible. It is like the most unrealistic part of this film. And this is a film about someone who's genetically re-engineered dinosaurs to bring them back to life. And yet the most unrealistic thing is a girl doing gymnastics. Terrible.
Now, let's talk about this film's second ending.
So The Lost World as a film reminds me of a great quote I recently heard regarding another movie. And that quote is, I watched the entire movie and then there was still a half hour left. And that is this film.
So they manage to contact the mainland and get a chopper off the island. And sort of in a parallel to the first movie, it shows the four of them all very upset flying off the island, just like in the first movie when they were all flying off the island.
The other hero of this movie, Roland, the hunter, has already completed his arc when he decides to walk away from a life surrounded by death.
I believe I've spent enough time in the company of death, coming from the guy who kills things.
And I thought to myself, well, at least it's over. And then I noticed that there's still 30 more minutes.
So everyone's rescued and we get off the island and it's great. You would think this would be the end of the film, but no, they've captured a T-Rex.
And after that, the other characters get on the helicopter. That is the true ending of Jurassic Park, The Lost World.
So it turns out they're able to dart, trank, capture, and transport the T-Rex back to San Diego.
And let's bring it back to San Diego, the San Diego. You know what that means. Thank you, Anchorman.
I really love the Babe Dino in the City ending for this movie.
I've heard that the idea of the T-Rex being on the loose in the city was kind of the idea for part 3. Now, whether or not they just couldn't work out the plot details, or perhaps Spielberg was just kind of done and he's like, I don't want to do a third one, so just we'll slap it in here. I don't know. But it does feel tacked on.
Absolutely unnecessary.
I mean, if you told me that at the end of the film, it would be Malcolm waking up from a fever dream in a psych ward and that he imagined this entire thing, I would find it more believable than the way this movie actually ends.
And then that's at an hour 40. And then after that, we begin what I like to consider like the free DLC for this movie.
Even tonally, it just feels different than the rest of the film. Seemingly more comedic if you really look at the situation at play.
Oh, here we have Jurassic Park 2, Cruise Control.
So the boat crashes into the island, the T-Rex gets out and everything, and then who killed the crew?
So in this scene where the boat that has the adult T-Rex is arriving in port, I never quite understood why everyone on the boat was dead.
Although, what exactly happened on that boat ride over? How exactly did the entire crew die?
Okay, so real quick, everyone on the boat is dead, which is why the boat didn't stop. But I'm confused as to how everyone was killed on the boat.
Like, I'm not being funny, but the crew's dead. You literally see the captain's hand still gripping the steering wheel. The dinosaur gets loose, and I'm going to talk about it in a second, and does all these stuff, and then they bring it back and get him back on and turn the boat around. But who killed the crew?
By the T-Rex that was stuck in the cargo hold.
How exactly did the entire crew die and their body parts get scattered throughout the boat?
And also, if the T-Rex did the killing, then wouldn't it have also like smashed through? I mean, it's giant. It couldn't have just killed someone inside the cockpit, right? So does that mean that there is actually a raptor that's stowed away or something like that?
Who killed the crew? There's no f***ing other dinosaurs here, apart from the T-Rex, which was in the cargo hold, still sedated and trying to bash its way out. It didn't somehow, like, shrink and ninja its way into the captain's deck or whatever it is, whatever you call it in Star Trek, and eat everything.
I've heard raptors were meant to be aboard, but they're never seen nor mentioned. At least, I never heard them mentioned, but that would have made some sense.
So, looking it up, I found a couple different, I guess, parts of the script that were never filmed. But the idea was either A, raptors get on the boat and killed a bunch of people, but the T-Rex was also not contained at the time because they it was slipping into a coma, so they gave it a bunch of uppers and it went berserk and killed all the raptors and the humans, or the T-Rex again went berserk after they gave it a bunch of uppers and it killed everybody. Apparently, when we're looking at the cabin of the boat and you see the captain's hand on the steering wheel, from the angle that the camera is at, there is a giant hole where the T-Rex busted its head in and killed everybody. So we guess that's what happened. And then the guy, one crew member managed to trap it down in the cargo hold, maybe?
What else was on this boat? And where is it now? Is it just roaming the streets of San Francisco? Like some sort of escaped lion or something? I don't know. It's just like never explained. Yeah, oh, the crew's dead. The boat crashes into the thing, but yeah, we'll get the T-Rex back and turn it around. Yeah, no. Who killed the crew? Who killed the crew?
Have someone say some raptors got aboard, but we killed them all. ADR that shit in, and boom, plot hole saved.
Still not as bad as the gymnastics moment. That was terrible.
So earlier in the movie, like with the whole lawyer talking to people through satellite TV thing, they phrased that the new Jurassic Park is going to be a zoo, but when we finally see it, it appears to be more like an auction floor, where like the dinosaur comes out and the people are in caves with the dinosaur in the middle, which is something that's going to kind of make another appearance three movies from now.
By far the best scene, though, is when that T-Rex gets loose in San Diego.
It's basically a mini sequel within the movie, Jurassic Park 2.5, Jurassic Park 2.5 starts. It's 40 minutes long. It's like a novella of a movie. It's a movella. It's a new thing perhaps I've invented today, or already someone else has already invented it, and I'm now parallel inventing it on my own.
Anyway, the T-Rex escapes the boat, and now it's in downtown San Diego or the suburbs or something.
Now, the bit where the dinosaur drinks from the swimming pool and eats the kid's dog, there's some serious thing here that I really need to talk about, okay?
Okay, so let's just say that the true psychopaths in this entire franchise are these parents.
Yes, the parents, as they're talking, as they're going into the room. Yes, that having a fish tank
as a nightlight is a terrible idea.
Who sleeps with a bright-ass light on in their bedroom? Psychopaths. That's who.
It's definitely keeping the kid awake and stopping him from going into a good, deep REM sleep.
But that's great. That's when we have a T-Rex in San Diego. It's completely... It doesn't need to be there. Again, the rest of the movie has already ended. Everything else is wrapped up. There isn't really any kind of like arc for any of the characters except for Roland, to be honest. Unless you consider getting eaten by a dinosaur because you're an idiot to be part of your arc. In which case, yeah, I guess this also wraps up Ding Dong Nephew's story arc.
And they're like, how do we get it back? And they're like, well, we have the baby. So let's go get the baby and lead it on a car chase. Of course.
You know, Ian's car is like a tank. It like goes through barriers, it goes through walls, gets minor scuffs and scrapes. Finally, by the end, I think it's got a cracked windshield, but it should be in much rougher shape than that.
But it's so great, the dinosaur rampaging around San Diego. It's very funny.
I think we've overdone the impact tremor causing water to ripple thing a bit too much at this point.
While a lot of people complained about the sequence with the T-Rex in California, I believe it's San Diego, that was actually one of my favorite parts of the film.
The movie is now full on camp. I mean, it's like they made two movies. I swear that was the guy from Troll 2 who just got eaten with some really lame sound effects. I looked it up. It's not, but he looks just like him. He does.
Anyway, I found the San Diego sequence to be one of the more entertaining aspects of the film.
I mean, this is a joke, right?
I know the T-Rex running around in San Diego is a bit hokey. But I like it. I just like silly, hokey things.
What happened to this movie?
No, it did get a little ridiculous, but it was fun, and it was different.
Damn, these people in San Diego. These people in San Diego really can't drive well at all, can they? they're all crashing and flipping their cars all over the place. It's absolutely terrible. It's an atrocious thing. I mean, come on.
They bust through a Blockbuster and there's like very briefly on screen some fake movie posters for Robin Williams' movie Jack and the Beanstalks, which sounds super believable. Tom Hanks and something called Tsunami Sunrise, which sounds very 80s, very believable. And a movie poster for Arnold Schwarzenegger in William Shakespeare's King Lear, which that made me laugh. I think that's fun.
Oh, there's a fun scene where a bus trying to escape the T-Rex smashes through a Blockbuster, and I freeze-framed it so I could look at some of the movie posters for fake movies they had in there. So we have Schwarzenegger playing King Lear, Shakespeare's King Lear. We have Robin Williams in a movie called Jack and the Beanstalks. Tom Hanks in a film called Tsunami Sunrise, where he's surfing on a tsunami. And under each of them, it says, you know, coming to video cassette. And then in parentheses, it says, also available on Laserdisc. So that brought me back.
Remember, the T-Rex can only run at maximum 32 miles per hour. You know, any driver can drive safely at 32 miles per hour and escape the T-Rex. You know, just get up to 33 and you're good. I can drive around side streets all day long at 30 miles per hour and safely get away without flipping it. I could probably even reverse at 30 miles per hour and do a J-turn and go forward. But, you know, I'm really cool.
And all this is in the bonus Jurassic Park 2.5 Babe, Dino in the City mini sequel movella that we get at the end of Jurassic Park Lost World.
Also, we get a bunch of, I assume, Japanese businessmen running from the T-Rex, you know, a giant lizard through the city.
And speaking of that, while they didn't scream, Gojira, seeing the Japanese businessmen running from the T-Rex makes my eyes roll, because are we not done with this stupid joke?
Hey, who can forget the Asians who are running and not screaming Godzilla?
We got it, okay? Oh, Japanese people, oh, it's a big monster, oh, Godzilla. Stop the joke. Stop it.
What a preface for the 98 Matthew Broderick Godzilla. Like, was this some type of super meta, like, trailer? Was this just an extended trailer for Godzilla 98 and just nobody ever knew at the time? It was, wasn't it? God damn it, it f-ing was.
So I thought that was fun.
In this also, this sequel, we get the 2.5 sequel. T-Rex eating a kid's dog. Eats a kid's dog with the doghouse hanging out of his mouth. That's the funniest thing in Jurassic Park since little Timmy got electrocuted and went flying off a fence. Oh, this, yeah.
They're leaning more into the comedy aspect with Malcolm throughout this whole scene, even though they're running for their lives.
The best quote from the movie comes from this movella. Once the dinosaur escapes from the hold and is rampaging around San Diego, Ian Malcolm leans over to dipshit nephew Peter Ludlow and says, "Now you're John Hammond." That's nice.
So they're escaping onto the ship, taking the baby to the ship. And Malcolm has the infant. They're running up because it's like, oh shit, mama's following, better run. And Malcolm does have a baby, and then they immediately leap off the ship, but there's no more baby.
Yep, they got the T-Rex back on the boat. They lured it there with the baby. Of course they did.
Did Malcolm just yeet that baby Rex like 30, 40 feet into an opening? Like, I'm pretty sure that would refracture that leg and maybe the rest of its body.
Still not as bad as the gymnastics moment. That was terrible.
And Ludlow, he gets his comeuppance. Great.
What a good ending for the lawyer, though. Like, this was such a fun scene for being, like, a whack movie. Like, I mean, maybe not whack movie. This part was whack. What a way to end it, where it's just this, like, yeah, you know, it's a mother and child heartwarming scene where the mother disables, you know, the prey and, like, lets the baby eat it. Like, as a kid, as an adult, yeah, I love this. This is great.
Come on! What killed the crew? They got it back on the boat. They killed fucking Hammond's brother, or whoever that fucking twat is. And then they turned the boat around and taken it back to the island.
Like, all of everything around this was just dumb. But, like, this one scene, it's like, yeah, sure, I'm here for it. Like, you've already taken me on this wild ride. Like, this is what I'm here for. Heartwarming dinosaur moments.
All the loose ends have been tied up. Except I still have no idea how the captain of the ship and everyone on the ship was killed by the T-Rex when it was stuck in the cargo hold. Are we sure? Are we sure there weren't any other dinos on the ship? Are we sure?
Who killed the crew?
The dinosaurs are sent back home, and Hammond makes his plea to leave the island in peace. But we all know that's not gonna happen. In any case, I wasn't really expecting another Jurassic Park film because where do you go from here?
So we're finally at the end of the film, and we see Hammond on TV giving an interview with the news. And finally, we get that brilliant leitmotif from the music from the first film.
Oh, and by the end of the film, John Hammond is able to go on TV and make an announcement pleading that America and the rest of the world work together and declare that this island is a nature preserve and, you know, should be safe from all human involvement. Probably seems like the best idea overall with any dinosaurs in this franchise, because it never ends well.
These movies weren't really setting up sequels. They were telling stories about these fairytale creatures being brought back to life and attempting to destroy mankind. I'm kidding. It's a joke. Get over it.
And then we get the full score from the first movie.
John Williams also does return to score the film, as he seemingly does for every Spielberg film. I'm sure he hasn't scored them all, and I'm sure I could do a quick Google search of that too, but I'm not gonna.
And I just went and I looked, and Williams intentionally avoided using the themes from Jurassic Park 1 when he made this score, because he said he wanted to do a more action-oriented score to sort of fit the film.
Music, I didn't really notice that much with it. I mean, the theme is still banger. It's still iconic when you hear the Jurassic Park theme as it comes here and there throughout the film.
But here, he doesn't phone it in and recycle the original score, but does create something new that feels like a nice progression from the original. Still, it's not as memorable.
The score is fine for what it is, but, I mean, there was no way he was going to... Well, I guess it's John Williams. Maybe he could do better than the first film. Never mind. I take it all back. John Williams could do whatever he wants.
I think the last shot of the movie, showing that pterodactyl flying over Isla Sonar, might be the coolest shot in the whole movie.
Wait, pterodactyls? They could just fly away from the islands. Oh my god, so many questions. Like, the big questions of this film. Who killed the crew? Why are the pterodactyls flying around? And how did that girl flunk gymnastics? Okay, other than that, great movie.
Anyway, there's a cut to, like, I guess a scene on the island where all the dinosaurs are living and the score is swelling and the dinosaurs are all happy and now there's pterodactyls? Which, what? It, and that's how it ends? What? Okay.
Who killed the crew? They were all dead. It wasn't the T-Rex. What killed the crew? What was it?
You know, not a whole lot to say about The Lost World. It's just kind of meh.
Overall impressions of The Lost World. I liked it. It's good.
While The Lost World is a bit of a step down from the original, it's still a good movie.
Yeah, so I, as a kid, loved it, and I still do. I think it is a fun sequel. I do prefer this over Jurassic Park 3, which we'll get into in Jurassic Park 3.
If you take it in its totality, maybe Lost World is a okay movie. If you look at Lost World as an hour 40 and then the DLC Movella episode 2.5 as a separate 40-minute movie, then I think they both are much stronger. The parts are greater than the whole in this particular instance.
But I like the first movie in The Lost World. The second movie, even as a kid, is like, okay, what's happening now? I don't know where I'm at anymore.
Unlike the first film, which takes place in a relatively small area, like it's all contained to the island, you know, the park itself for the most part. This one is all over the place. It's a much bigger story, and I don't think it's necessarily better for it. We have a lot more characters, a lot more moving pieces. There's just a lot going on.
So essentially, this movie is just more the same, isn't it? It just takes a while. It takes a little while to get going, to get to the dinosaur action. But once you get to the dinosaur action, you could have easily just slotted this into the first Jurassic Park. You could have been like, yep, shit's gone bad because, you know, the fat guy's turned off all the security stuff. Oh, look, all the fucking hunters turned up to try and capture a T-Rex. You could have easily just slotted this all in, and it's just more the same, and I really, really like it.
For the most part, it's pretty easy to follow. It's not like it's super complex. I just think that, you know, less is more. Some of the leaps you have to buy, and like the leaps you have to make to just not start scratching your head and take yourself out of the story are pretty large ones. And there's some pretty glaring continuity errors and how the hell could that possibly have happened kind of things.
Yeah, I really like it. This film isn't as bad as people make out. You know, it gets a bit silly when it gets towards the end, but it's still just more the same lovely dinosaur goodness. I really like it.
Again, it's not that it's a bad movie. It's actually a pretty decent movie. But when you compare it to the original, it pales in comparison pretty significantly. It's a pretty large step down. Now, that said, it was still pretty fun.
Not to berate the dead or anything, but over the years, my view of Michael Crichton's work has changed a little bit. During the release of Jurassic Park, he seemed like Hollywood's new golden goose. His name seemed to lend some sort of confidence and pedigree that Spielberg once had. However, if you look at his body of work, it's fine. Just not a list of heavy hits one after another, you know? Again, not knocking his work, it's just an observation.
Is any of this accurate? This movie better be accurate. There's no way a dinosaur movie would be inaccurate.
Coolest dinos, I don't know if I had a favorite part, but I enjoyed seeing more variety. We got to see some stegos. We finally got to see a Pachycephalosaurus, or Friar Tuck, as it's called. I like seeing more of a variety. And then you still got your T-Rexes and your Velociraptors and some of your, you know, your favorites from the first film.
Wait, all the original dinosaurs on the first Jurassic Park died within 7 days? Did I miss that was a thing? Like, is that because they got off the virtual tour early? Did I miss that? Is that why? I should have paid more attention to that awful virtual ride tour they put you through when you could be looking at dinosaurs.
But yeah, the choice of having two villains, because the second villain is Nick the photographer, played by Vince Vaughn. He is like the stealth villain. You think that he's part of the crew that John Hammond sends to the island, but this dude is just a agent of chaos. He releases the dinosaurs that the InGen team has captured, which knocks out the communication equipment so that when inevitably everything goes off the rails, they're unable to get in touch with anyone to get back home. He brings an injured T-Rex back to his camp, which ultimately results in them losing their communication equipment and the death of Toby Ziegler. He takes bullets from the secondary hero of the movie, Roland, takes his bullets away from him so that later when the T-Rex is attacking, he can't kill the T-Rex to stop it. Instead, he tranquilizes it, which then allows primary villain Peter Ludlow to take the T-Rex back to San Diego. So yeah, Nick is an absolute disaster to everybody's safety in this movie.
Best action sequence. I mean, they're all entertaining, but they are all a little hokey to a point. I guess I'd go with the T-Rex parents when they attack the trailer and the cars. Physics be damned of how everything works, but I like that.
But yeah, as much as I love the British actor with the bald head, who's the hunter, whose name I can never remember, he's a really good actor. it's just, yeah, hunting is cruel as fuck. And he makes the comment of he's fed up of pandering to rich dentists and stuff, and I completely agree. Rich dentists, you need to stop going out and killing beautiful animals. We as humans, we need to be less cruel to Mother Nature and to the world around us. We need to protect animals like lions and elephants and rhinos. And just because you're a posh motherfucker who helps people's teeth stay straight and white doesn't mean you can go off every summer and shoot a fucking lion in Africa, you Yep, so hunters are arseholes. That is basically the moral of this story. Oh, and capitalism. Capitalism's bad. It squeezes that in there at the end.
When I saw it, the first time, I really didn't care for it at all. It's grown on me quite a bit since then, to the point where, you know, I'm happy to watch it. It's better than part three. It's probably on par with part four, and it's better than part five. So there's not much to complain about, I suppose, just other than the fact that, you know, it felt like it could have been better.
I think that's basically it. Not gonna belabor the point. One last thing. At one point in the first sequel, the Lost World part, not the 2.5, they show that this island, Site B, is part of a cluster of island called the Five Deaths. And I looked up their names to translate them, and roughly translated, the Five Deaths are They Kill Zeros Island, Dead Island, Sarcasm Island, Stingy Island, and Grief Island. And I just love thinking of those things as the five deaths. For what it's worth, this one, the sequel movie, takes place on Sarcasm Island, and make of that what you will.
I just don't have a lot to say about The Lost World.
I think it lacks the lightning in a bottle quality of the original. If it was shorter, I think it would have been a much better movie. But unfortunately, the movie really does drag at times. It's not nearly as bad as the Jaws sequels.
I'm entertained by it. It is not nearly as good as the original.
But this one really makes a case for why Spielberg so rarely directs sequels. Of course, with the exception of the Indiana Jones series, of course, which we'll also be covering before Indy 5 hits theaters next summer.
The Lost World is not a bad film, in my opinion. It's just a film that was never going to meet the high expectations of its predecessor.
I don't think it's the worst one in the franchise, at least for me. I know other people hate this one. I don't hate this one. I'm still entertained by it. I don't think it's as bad as a dumpster fire as other films that we will be talking about, but I'll still watch this one. There's other ones that I'm not going to enjoy revisiting, and I'm going to greatly dislike them.
It's you know, it's not my favorite, obviously. It's far from my least favorite. It's just kind of like middle of the road. It's fine. But I will have a lot to say about our topic for next time.
That said, this came out in 1997, a year before the 90s Godzilla, which we've talked about back on season 4. And while that movie wasn't good, I still have to admit I had more fun revisiting that one than The Lost World.
But I'm looking forward to continuing and finally going to see Dominion, probably in a couple weeks at this point.
Keep on cloning out there, baby. Keep on cloning dinos.
Jurassic Park 2, everybody. What are we doing next time? They made a third one. Well, it can't be this bad, right? Right?
So next is going to be Jurassic Park 3, which is probably my least favorite in the series. And I know that's very controversial for a lot of the people on our Discord.
Anyway, what's up next? Yeah, Jurassic Park 3! This is the one where he gets on the plane and they land. Oh my god. I love this film. Grant's back. Yeah.
But, you know, we'll get to that movie when we get to it.
That's it for today's episode of Podcasters Assembled. Be sure to join us next time when we talk about Jurassic Park 3. This time it's personal.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some Jurassic Park 3. I'm really enjoying this series. Oh, it's good to be back.
So until next time, podcasters, assemble.
Next time on Podcasters Assemble.
To be continued.
Podcasters Assemble is a production of the We Can Make This Work, Probably, Podcast Network. Find more of our shows at probablywork.com and learn how to contribute to future episodes of Podcasters Assemble by looking us up on Twitter and Instagram at Casters Assemble or joining our Discord page. Link in the show notes. Submissions are always open. Intro written by Eric Slater.
And
Stephen White.
Music by Deft Stroke Sound.
Voiceover by random faceless man in front of a microphone in a basement. Goes by the first name Dave, last name Steele.
This episode was edited by Eric Slater. Thank you to everyone who was able to contribute to this episode. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to where you can find them all online.
You can also help support this podcast by visiting patreon.com/podcastersassemble. Thank you.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
Oh my god. So many questions. Like, the big questions of this film. Who killed the crew? Why are the pterodactyls flying around? And how did that girl flunk gymnastics? Okay? Yeah, so, yeah, those are the three questions of this film. Okay, so if you've got the answers to those, please put those on a postcard to at Eric Slater at probablywork.com, and your questions will be answered by the void of time.
One of the, like, other oddities, and, like, Hammond, God hate him. I like that he told Team 1 that there would be two teams, and then did not tell Team 2 that there would be two teams. Man, like, epic fails. Eric, you really should just do a whole episode on Hammond. This guy is truly the epicest of fails.
Sarah! Final Fantasy 13 joke for you people. By the way, we've got an RPG club over at the RPG After Years, and we're currently playing Final Fantasy 13. So if you're playing along with us, you'll get that joke.
And while they have similar plots, the novel does do things differently than the film, based on the synopsis I read. Yes, the synopsis. I've never read the book, okay? Why? Because I've never had a copy in front of me, so get off my back. I read. I think I've proven words of my strong suit around here, don't you think? That do be facts, yo.
Guys, pour one out for Eddie. Eddie didn't deserve to die.
His name was Eddie, right? maybe? Yes, okay. This guy was so great. What's his name? Clearly left a lasting impression.
Fucking T-Rexes.
It wasn't the T-Rex. What killed the crew? What was it?